Hey guys, it's Will Terry, and my book is finally finished. It's here. It's live on Kickstarter. It's called What They Don't Teach in Art School. And this is the project that I was talking about in several podcasts before that got delayed due to COVID. It's an illustrator's guide to making money in the real world. You can check out the links in the show notes, or you could just go to Kickstarter and type in What They Don't Teach in Art School. Hey, thanks.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. And all three of us are professional illustrators. And we've all worked for about the last 25 years with just about every major publisher in the business. We publish somewhere between 50 and 100 books collectively, and we've all taught illustration at the university.
Each week, we have a new topic on illustration, and sometimes we're going to agree, sometimes we're going to argue, but each time you are going to learn something brand spanking new.
I hate to start the podcast off with a little bit of a rant, but I have to read an email that I got from it's an ad agency asking if I was available to work for them.
Uh-oh. Okay, and let's hear it.
Obviously, you're not going to work with them if you're going to put this out there.
No. I like working with them. They're great to work with.
Okay.
And they're easy to work with, too. Threw me for a loop. I didn't know this was a thing. So, email is titled, Time Sensitive, Upcoming Availability. Are you available for this project from this day to this day? We think you'd be great for it. Okay. And I said, yeah, that sounds good. That works with my schedule. Sign me up. And they got back to me and said, all right, the team will be pumped to have you on board. Considering the many COVID-19 restrictions, are you able to offer a reduced day rate? And that totally threw me off, threw me by surprise, because I did not realize that was a thing people were doing. Like, okay, yeah, I'll do the same work for you this time as I've done last time, same conditions, working remotely, but instead of charging X amount, I'm going to charge you, I don't know, 80%, 60%, something like that. What do you guys think of that?
I say you double your rate now.
I think what I would worry about is that they're trying to take advantage of you during this time, because if it's did you mention what it was for?
I don't want to.
Okay, either. But it's for a mass market product that is, we know people are buying.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yes.
Commercial level.
Can you even say what genre it's in?
No, don't do that.
I don't want to. Okay. I don't want to go there.
But it's a name brand company.
And we've talked about this, exactly. So we know. I doubt their profits are down at all during this time.
Yeah.
So why
every
are
time
asking?
I go to that aisle in the grocery store, it's empty.
Right.
You're giving away too much info.
And it's not toilet paper. But anyway, yeah. So you're that's weird.
Yeah, there's no reason. There's no reason for that.
What are you going to tell them?
It ruffled my feathers a little bit because the work I'll be doing is the same as the work before. I'm working remotely like I worked before.
Right.
I don't know what the restrictions they're talking about are.
Well,
so my response was short and sweet. I just said, sorry, I can't reduce my rates right now.
Oh.
And
good.
We'll see what happens.
Did you say?
I think the criteria there is who's the client and how are they going to be using the work? I just got an offer or sort of a similar email that a big company rhymes with Cramazon. They bought one of my stories and for a limited time, they want to make the stories available to their online read aloud group make the story available online for free through like the end of June or something. And mm-hmm. I had to ask my agent and try to figure out like, is this normal? Why are they, I'm not going to get paid for it there, but they're not offering it commercially. They're making it free for the end user. Too, even mm-hmm. though there is a value there because they get content that they're not having to pay for. But because mm-hmm. it was such a limited use and because it was educational only, I did it and said, and I was okay with that. But if they would have been charging for it or something like that, I would have pushed back a little harder. So because you just got to weigh each one. I didn't love it either. But
right. Yeah.
You have enough money, Lee.
Artists get, we were talking about this. How many other professions get asked to do stuff for free? If you guys are, you know, we have all of our shows up on our forum. I would love for you guys to respond to this email and say, just if anybody's in another profession where they get as many requests to work for free or discounted rate, I would love to hear what it is. Cause our examples was like, you never hear like a cabinet maker, like getting a call saying, hey, do you think you can come give me some free cabinets?
Okay.
Like,
but I'm going to push back on that. You know how we're supposed to argue sometimes.
Each week we come at you with a different story. Sometimes,
sometimes Will wins the argument. But basically, what about dentists and doctors and stuff? So they don't, you know, people don't go up front that often, I think, and say, hey, can you work for less? But then when they get the bill, they don't pay it. And then it goes to collections. And then they say, well, we can settle for this amount, you know, so they're asking right after they've gotten the work. So, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but are doctors in the same boat as illustrators financially? When they're getting like $500 an hour.
Their boat is a lot bigger than ours.
I don't know. I think too, like doctors provide an essential service, like a life-saving,
right,
life-improving service.
Hold on. Illustrators save lives.
Yeah.
We do.
Okay.
We create better mental health so people don't, you know, kill themselves because of our artwork.
Indirectly, I do think that's actually true. I mean, the world is a designed place. People don't value the artist that much, but every single thing, my desk, my coffee cup,
everything.
Everything is designed, and it comes from people thinking about how to use it and
that's
what
right.
looks best and why do you buy the things you buy.
We probably save more lives than doctors. Because we're preventative.
We're basically like Mother Teresa, all three of us saving people around the world.
I, on the hierarchy of needs, on the Laszlo's, I think that's what it's called, the hierarchy of needs, illustration is above, I think, or is below the need of medical care. So
you think?
Yes.
What if you break it, if somebody breaks their leg, they typically run to an illustrator.
And why do they get better in the hospital? Is because they get a card with artwork.
Ooh.
Dumbest argument.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's move on. Anyway, it's just weird that everybody asks artists to do stuff for free all the time. I mean, it's at every stage of your career. When you're a student, oh, you'll get promotion out of it. You know, when you're a professional, hey, you got enough. Come on, donate something for this thing or that thing. And I don't know. It's I just don't think other professions have that. How many times does a personal trainer get asked to train somebody for an hour for free?
Right.
Yeah.
A doctor or a lawyer who does offer like some of these, you know, like important essential services, I think they do pro bono stuff. They do sort of like community service.
Yeah, that's different though.
Offerings.
They're trying to do that.
Yes, but that's coming from them. It's not
right.
People, they're not like expected to, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's move into today's topic.
Oh, that wasn't the topic for the day?
No.
That's a good topic though. Pro bono work.
Yeah. Or how many lives do illustrators save versus doctors? That would be a good.
Make a t-shirt that says illustration saved my life.
No, I want to talk today about what do you do? Like, what should you be doing or what can you do when you're not getting any work? No jobs are coming in. You're not getting emails, no assignments.
I think Will is the one to address that because that's his life. Sorry.
So
what's
like
that like, Will?
The insult dog.
What's that like when you don't get any work, Will?
Wow. What did I do?
Sorry. That was low-hanging. It was low-hanging fruit. It was right there.
So I have a list, as expected. These are 10 things I thought of that you can do, that you should be doing in the downtime.
Did you draw the list on the impossibly small cards?
I did.
If you guys are looking at our YouTube channel, if you're just listening to this, go to our YouTube channel and look at this. Jake has these little note cards. I mean, they are the size of a business card, and he makes, I mean, like a 50 list, 50 item list on the back of these little cards.
And it's not just a post-it note either.
No, I write small anyway. These are from Nokco, Nokco.co. Mm-hmm. And they're just these nice little index cards that are business card size. And they've got like a graph printed on them. Mm-hmm.
How much are you getting for working this in right now?
3-point perspective brought to you by Nokco cards. Yeah,
how much are you getting for working that in?
That was a great commercial.
They have not paid me a dime. I just like this stuff, but I will in the spirit of
so those little things are made truth. To write on? That you didn't make those out of like 8.5 by 11 paper that you just cut down. You actually have little cards.
No, they come in a little package. So yeah, they're like little index.
God, that's cards. So specific.
I would never buy that to try out.
They mailed these to me to try out, and I use them.
So. Did they really?
Yeah.
I want to see who's the person who's critiquing those negatively. Like, these little index cards did not work for the need that I had.
Yeah, because they weren't big enough. Like, what the heck?
Right.
Well, when you write as small as I do, and you're writing on a giant sheet of paper, such a waste of paper.
That is such a specific industry. I can't believe there's a company that makes little index tiny cards. Can you make a little paper airplane during this?
They actually do make for nice little paper airplanes too.
All right, moving on. Wow.
Okay. Item number one you can work on when you're down. And you guys feel free to add to this, take away from this, poke holes at this. But I think one of the first things you should do is figure out a networking plan. Because oftentimes the reason you aren't getting asked to do work or aren't getting jobs could be that you're just not in the forefront of people's minds who are offering jobs. So a networking plan would be make a list of everybody you've done work for in the past and just set a little schedule for yourself to stay in contact with them once or twice a year. And it doesn't, and I would look at it not as networking, but as friendshipping. So you would just shoot an email and say, and you could have it be related to whatever project you worked on before. You could have it be just related to the situation that we're in. You might be moving into spring. You might be moving into summer. You might be moving into winter. You could just say, hey, I've been really bad about networking, and I'm trying to get better at it. And so I just wanted to stay in touch. How are you doing? If you're just staying honest with it, then I think that's a good way to stay in the forefront of people's minds. So you shoot an email, you shoot a text if you have their number, but you just check in on them, see how they're doing. That's it. Is that kind of how you guys
I'll add a little analogy to that or a visual to that. I call that group my bullseye. Because in marketing, you've got basically three rings. You've got the people that you don't know. They're the outermost ring, right? And that's just the postcard blast. You know, whenever you do a postcard mailer or email kind of blast, it's all those people. And then a few people out of that group respond. That's that kind of second ring that goes around the bullseye or dartboard or whatever you're looking at. And those are the people that are actually interested. So they might get a little bit more custom of a mailer. They might get a little bit more personal of a message, like once a year or something like that, a Christmas card. You know, they're just a little bit different list because they've shown interest. But that bullseye group is the people that have contacted you. You've worked with them in some capacity, and that is a fantastic group to just keep doing what Jake said. I mean, you got to do it. You can do it often. What I do with that group is add them to a formal little list, depending on, you know, I have a group in my Apple contacts or whatever that is just people that I've worked with. And whenever I do a new piece or I get done with a new book and it's finally going to come out and I can actually release images, I'll send it out saying, hey, here's what I've been working on. Just wanted to check in. That's all I say. I don't ask them, it doesn't have to be this big long email where they have to respond to me because I don't want them to make it feel like they have to work or need anything. I just say, hey, I'm checking in. I've been doing this book. It's pretty cool. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, 6 months later, there's another job from them that comes in. And so that you take care of that bullseye group. That's the group that you actually spend some money on and maybe send a custom thing to, you know, at Christmas, send them a you know, something special. And it makes a difference.
I think
I send them some small note cards, make little notes.
I was just going to throw in there, I think it's key too to say, no rush in getting back to me. If you know, you don't even have to get back to me, just include something like that. Cause then it's like, doesn't show that you're sniffing around or desperate about anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think something that a lot of, especially beginning illustrators don't realize is we think it's obvious that the clients we've worked for know that we want to work for them again, but it's not. Mm-hmm. They're getting bombarded by so many other illustrators that are begging for work that if you're not, you know, even though you've worked for them, if you're not letting them know that, hey, I love that last thing we did and I would love to do another one with you, then they're like, okay. But they might, you know, a lot of people, if they don't hear from you, they might think, well, they don't care. They don't care.
Or they're too busy to do my project.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they could think anything. Who knows what they think?
Yeah. You got to let them know.
All right. The next thing is to organize your digital space and organize your physical space. So, at some point the work will come again and you're going to be busy. And the more organized you are on your hard drive and the more organized you are, just in your work area, the easier and faster everything's going to go when you get into the grind again. So, take the time to format your computer in a way, lay out your files in a way that they're easy to find. Old stuff's archived, references organized, things like that. Put your tools, organize your tools and your workspace and everything in a way that it's just easy to use and easy to work with, and kind of figure out how you can optimize everything.
Stuff makes a huge difference. And how you feel and also how your day progresses.
Exactly. So that would be, I think that don't get carried away with that either. Like you could fine tune it so much that it becomes, it becomes its own thing to do. And I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't take it to the degree that it's eclipsing other important things that need to happen.
But also it does take a little bit longer than you think. I think some people don't give it enough time. And so for me, I'm finishing up a book this week and I've got some major studio stuff I just need to take care of. My files that hold all my prints are failing. And so the whole stack is now starting to tip over. So I'm basically going to take a week. I'm going to take 5 days just because there's some annoying stuff in my workflow that I haven't been able to take care of over the past year. And I'm just going to take those 5 days and finish all that stuff up, because if I try to just piecemeal it, an hour here, hour there, it'll never get done. And it just requires that kind of a thing. So I always recommend people do that. And also when you get into a project and you're going to start a new, you're going to get into, say, like Inktober or something like that, one of my big recommendations is, spend a week or two getting the reference together and figuring out what you want to draw and all that stuff, because that stuff also gets discounted. So the beginning of a project or setting up for a project, just give it its own space, and it's just so much more enjoyable that way.
Yeah. Cool. Will, did you have anything, any insight on that regard?
On cleaning up after your, organizing and all that? I think you guys said it. I'm probably less organized than you, Jake, but because I work digitally, there's not a lot of mess after a job. One thing that I do sometimes, if I have a little extra time and I'm thinking about it, I do keep a list of things that need to be done, things that I'm going to get to. Mm-hmm. And one of them is organizing my reference, organizing files, and they're, my reference is all on the computer right now. Another one is organizing assets that I can use in,
that's exactly what I mean. If you work digitally, all that stuff can get just as messy as a physical one.
I got an idea for a video.
Hold on. Let me finish this.
Go ahead. Hurry.
So I'm working on a project right now where I have, fencing, and in the illustrations, I've got different different objects and stuff that I can use again. And so I'm going to go back through, because I've painted them on different layers, and grab them and label them and put them in my reference folders. That's on my list of things to do when I'm done with this job. And I didn't used to do that. And then I'd have to go back into my old jobs and try to find stuff, you know, and it was taking a lot of time. So yeah.
We should share reference folders. That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting.
That's what I was going to say for a video. We should go through all of our reference, and then each of the other people can see kind of the stuff that you've been looking at and see how it's affected your artwork.
I've got Jake's. It's on Pinterest.
Oh, is that what you do?
I keep online reference, but I also have a bunch of hard drive stuff too.
Pinterest has been so great for that.
It has. And then behind me, I mean, my wall of books, like I am always flipping through that stuff and seeing things. You know, a lot of people are like, well, is it everything online now? But not every book has been scanned and shared online. Mm-hmm. And so, especially some of the older ones that I have.
So I don't want to be on in front of a screen all the time. I like looking through a book every now and again.
Right. For real. And the only hard part is like, where do you put it when you're working?
Yeah.
Like finding a spot for it. I need an easel or something.
I got to build an easel now during my break.
Okay. The next thing I would say is come up with a social media strategy. So downtime is a great time to, you know, in between jobs is a great time to kind of focus on what you're doing online, what your online presence is. And it might be a good opportunity to go follow the types of industries that, if you're not already, just go find people and companies and things like that to follow, just to better educate yourself, to get better input from that, but also to connect with these people, either through comments, through posting, or through following and liking posts and reblogging or retweeting or reposting stuff, right? A lot of times that gets neglected when you're busy working, but I think when you have nothing to do and you're in between stuff, go back through your archive of artwork, post old stuff, post stuff that's interesting to you right now, and just kind of make yourself a little bit more visible on there.
Do you guys find that, I mean, me, Will, and Jake all do books, and they're long-term projects, and they are emotionally and mentally sort of what the right word is. It just takes such a deep amount of focus to do it that when I'm in the middle of a book, almost everything, both my studio organization, my social media presence, my networking, everything that you've listed so far falls down. Do you guys have that same experience, or do you have a way to battle that during?
So what I did recently, and I've just got to the end of it, but I went through and I found a bunch of my old illustrations like that were like 5 years old, and I reformatted them in square, like things that were either too wide or too tall. And I just kind of fleshed out so that they'd look good square and gave them a little bit more artwork and color on the sides. And I made like 10 of these. And I just decided I'm going to post one every week. If I don't have anything to post, at least I'm posting that. And what's been great is these things get way more likes than like the random sketches that I'm doing and posting. A lot of it's like old fan art and things like that. But it's all what you forget is rarely are people going through your archive and like digging deep years ago and looking at what you posted years ago. So don't feel bad if you're posting something that you posted.
But is it sort of a slight letdown when you post like an old thing and it gets way more likes than your current stuff? And you're like, oh man.
That's an interesting, this is an interesting idea, because I had this discussion with Eric Loftman when we were talking about our Kickstarters, just like a year ago. And I'm like, I don't produce enough new artwork to share, you know, just my own stuff, you know, with stuff that I'm doing for clients, I can't share. until it's printed. But like, I don't produce enough to post something every day, every other day. So if I'm getting ready for a Kickstarter or a project that I'm launching, then I kind of go more dark on social media for a while as I'm saving up and I'm drawing like mad, you know, and I'm saving stuff so that it has the first impact kind of thing when I launch the project. Mm-hmm. And Derek was like, dude, I just post old stuff. I'm like constantly just posting stuff. And he's like, people don't care. Smart. I would love to know how, you know, in our forums, under this podcast topic, if people have that kind of feeling, because I always have this feeling of, I feel dumb posting the same thing that I've done before.
Like, yeah, hey. Me too. I don't think you should feel dumb.
I feel stupid. You got to
remember that on Instagram, 20% of your followers see a post.
That's what he was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could do it right now. Go look at when we're done with the podcast. I want 100%.
Well, but are you gauging right now, when you say they don't see it? I mean, how many people flip through, see it? Don't you're counting the people that like or that comment?
No. Go view your insights and look at impressions. And impressions is, did it show up in a feed?
Right.
And they didn't do anything.
And that's about 20%.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's ridiculously small. So if you got 100 followers, 80 of those followers didn't see your post that you did this morning, you know, or yesterday.
Someone needs to pay for that.
That's why they say boost the post. I don't boost posts though, because I'm a cheapskate.
Well, there was a thing, I don't know if this is still true, but on Facebook it was, one channel proved
cooking the numbers.
Well, they proved that paying to boost your post, at least in the sense that anyone can just, you know, add money to boost it, not in doing some of the Facebook ads, but actually just kind of boosting your own post, actually gets you worse results, because there's people that are still doing this click farmy type thing. Anyway, without going off into the weeds, it'll get you more followers that don't care about you, thus diluting your overall pool. When you are getting 20% of impressions, now you're getting 20%, including the people that do not care about you at all, because they're in it for
That's interesting.
Other reasons of clicking and getting money from, I don't know. It's like a third world country type of thing.
You don't want, I'd rather have 100 like people who are genuinely interested in my stuff than 10,000 semi-interested.
Right.
Okay. So the next one I would say, I'm not even going in order of these, but in order that I've written them down, I'm going in order of like relevancy to what we're talking. So I think the next thing would be update your website. Okay. You know, that website, the thing that you built 5 years ago and you haven't touched since then.
That nobody goes back to because you never change it.
You'd be surprised. Yes. You'd be surprised. People might go back
if you changed it
and they see that nothing's changed. Right. So you're losing. The thing is you want an online home that's yours, that isn't going to get bought out by another company or get sued and bankrupted or whatever, get shut down. I mean, or have an algorithm change to it and now nobody sees it. And you just want your online home that's sort of untouchable, and put some love and a little bit of work into your website. Update it with all your latest stuff. Update your about page.
How old do you keep current. How far back does your website go with work your work?
My website, there's probably stuff on there that's 15 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because it's still relevant and I still would like to get a job like that, you know. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Will?
I have ancient stuff on there back during the Mayan civilization.
Well, I remember. So Will showed Jake and I yesterday a new image that he's doing, sort of based on an old image. And, you know, you change over time. We were able to look at that image and say, oh, Will would not do this image in the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I agree with what Jake's saying is maybe sometimes you got to go through and sort of cull through if you've changed a lot. Maybe there's stuff you don't want to get and pull that stuff off of there. I always tell students that. Go ahead.
I said we did that whole episode on websites.
Yeah.
So if you're just listening to this now and haven't heard that other one.
Yeah, we talk about the whole thing.
Full hour on what your website should be and look like.
Webshite. So, did you say webshite?
It's a new You're supposed new to term. Let that go. It's a personal courtesy, professional courtesy, Lee.
I'm saying that's a nice descriptive term. If you have a bad website, it's webshite.
We should have a courtesy that if it's your turn to come up with a podcast topic, that the other two guys can't word police you. You get an immunity for that day.
It's not word police. I like the word. Word shite. Web shite.
Word shite.
Anyway, if your website has old stuff, it's web shite.
That's shite. Right.
Right. So always, I mean, you should be staying on top of that, but perhaps the reason that you're not getting work right now is because the website hasn't been updated. So take the opportunity to do it.
How often do you guys, we probably talked about it in that episode, but how often do you guys think a new graduate or somebody who's just said, hey, I'm going to be an illustrator, how often should their portfolio change
in those first
couple of years? It's quick, right?
If you're doing, here's what's funny is I don't follow my own advice. So like if I'm giving advice, it would be have, you know, 10 to 30 pieces in your portfolio on your website. And yeah, every year to 2 years, they should be completely changing. But I use if you go to my site, I'm using it more as an archive. So my old stuff gets pushed down and my newer stuff is at the top. And I have, you know, over 100 images on there. And I probably should go back and pull some out. I might do that.
Or maybe categorize.
You guys are making me rethink. Yeah, maybe categorize a little bit. I don't know. I'm worried when you do when you break your site down. I always wonder if I have too many tabs and too many subcategories.
Yeah, people don't go there.
People aren't going to go through all of them. So I'm like, it's so easy to just scroll the big one with, you know, all those images that I'm thinking, well, maybe they'll just keep scrolling. I don't know. I need to install some behaviors on my site.
I just updated my online shop. I keep old products on there that have sold out, especially original art, just so people could see, oh, original art gets sold and it's not available anymore. Oh, and it went for this amount of money.
That's a really good idea to have that.
All right. Next one is polish up your portfolio. It goes right along with what we were talking about. And that is, you know, take a good look at your portfolio. And is it, you know, you're just the breadth of your work, and is it the kind of work that you want to be doing? Maybe take this time to add two or three new portfolio pieces. You know, take a week or so and work on something new. I think that just goes, oh, he just texted and said that his internet went down. So that might be it for Will today. Oh,
thank goodness. Now we can get some work done.
he'll have to log on and fight with us on the forum for this topic. All right, so update your portfolio, and I think we kind of dug into that as
I'd like to add something to that though. Something I always tell, I just popped into my head, but something I always tell my senior students when they have one or two semesters left and they're going to be out in the world, and they come in and they always have big ideas. Like, what's I say, what are you going to do this year? And they're like, oh, I'm going to make this whole new portfolio. And it's all these just really grand things, which is awesome. But typically you don't have enough time to run through the whole process of building an entire new portfolio from scratch. And so they end up kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And so my recommendation for them and my recommendation for our listeners now is, if you want to revamp your portfolio, start with something that you already have and say, how can I change that same idea? I mean, you can even use the same composition, same colors or whatever, but how would you do it different now? And use your own work as a starting point. And, you know, I've had students make the same image over the course of their time with me, and it's amazing to watch it grow like that. And it's so easy mm-hmm. because you're not starting from scratch. A concept has already been thought about, but now you polish it. And that's a great way to spend a, you know, half a year. You can get a massive amount of work if you are just redoing pieces that you already have and fixing them and making them better.
That's cool. That's good. Okay. So next one I would say is go through, now would be a good time to maybe go through and cut costs. And I kind of want, you know, this is a good time to like plan and prep and look at just your overall business structure and strategy and cut things that aren't doing anything for you. So I would follow the 80-20 rule with that. And that is, pick the 10 things that that you're spending money on every month and related to your business or maybe personal life, whatever, 10 things, and look at the bottom two that aren't delivering anything, or maybe look at the top two that are delivering the most and keep those and get rid of, see what you can get rid of the rest. On the inverse of that, take the top 10 things that you do to make money. So you get jobs from this client, you get jobs from this client, you get jobs over here from this particular thing. You have an online shop or whatever. And pick the two that are making you the most money and lean in hard on those moving forward and see if the time spent on the other stuff isn't worth it. You know, cut maybe the bottom two or three out and focus in harder on the things that make you more money, and that might be the thing to it. But you can go through and you could see, okay, well, shoot, I'm paying, you know, $10 a month on this storage, this online cloud storage, and I actually don't even use it, or I could shift that into using this other way to store files mm-hmm. or backup hard drive or something.
Have you seen that service called I think it's like Truebill or something like that?
No.
So I signed up for this. It's an app. And I tested it out last year. I think the one I use is called Truebill, but there's a couple of them out there. We're not sponsored by them or anything, so I can rag on them if I want to. But in this case, I'm going to promote them. It was fantastic. So I gave them a couple of account numbers, which is always scary to do. But they go through and they find all your subscriptions and they list them out. And through this app, Truebill, you can cancel all your subscriptions. You don't have to go individually to the different websites. You can just say, hey, cancel this one, cancel this one, cancel this one. And the ones that you keep, Truebill will robocall the company. Like I did, I went through AT&T. And so it said, do you want us to renegotiate your cell phone bill or your internet bill? I'm like, yeah, do that. And so first of all, just going through the subscriptions, I was able to save like $300 a month because it was all these little $5.99, $10.99 subscriptions.
Dang.
It was a lot. And I could not believe how much, when you added it all together, I was able to cut out. But it was hilarious when they went in to mess with my internet, because I get a call from the internet company after I had already told Truebill to do that. And it says, hey, we got this. This is a bizarre call. Like, we're getting somebody who's trying to negotiate from you. It's a robot. And I was like, they're like, do you want to go forward? And I was like, I don't know what the robot's saying, but if they're negotiating my price down, I'm giving authorization to the robot. And so I got my rate cut by like $30 or $40.
Dang.
It was cool. It was amazing.
Yeah, look at that.
It was amazing. It was called Truebill. That was like 2 years ago. I mean, I don't even know if it's still around right now. But anyway, my point is it's surprising when you look around and when you add up all these little things, what it can add up to.
Well, it's true. Like I heard, I was listening to this podcast the other day, and the guy's like, if you use a car, like if you end up, you work from home or whatever, and you end up using a car 4 times a month, 5 times a month, once a week, it's actually probably cheaper for you to do Uber.
Right. Absolutely.
Than it is to own a car.
Right. That's a good point.
So, you know, maybe you're a 2-car family. Maybe you could go down to 1 car and just Uber every time you need to like run into the office once a week or whatever, you know, and that might be our future, right?
Well, it's funny how quick, you know, how if you just change what you believe that you need, that you find out that you don't really need it. Like I had a car in Portland and it actually caught on fire. And I drove it to the donation place on fire. It was smoking, and I donated it while it was smoking. I had to get a ride home. So we were a two-car family until that one caught on fire. And then I was like, I'm just not going to get another car. It was fine. Like, we barely noticed it. We just had to figure out who's driving when, you know, a little more communication happened. But it was fine. Go from a two-car family to a one-car family. Saved a ton of money.
Okay, so the next one is enter contests or challenges. You can go online and you can see what sort of online art communities have contests going on. You can go on social media and see, you know, is there someone that's saying, hey, draw my character in your style? An online challenge could be something like Inktober, or it could be Mermaid, or it could be March of Robots, where these month-long things where you draw a new drawing every day. There's a thing that's been going around this earlier this year called Six Fan Arts. Have you seen that one?
I haven't seen that one.
So someone will post a blank page with six slots in it, and it says, basically they say, tell me which fan arts you want me to do. And then they go back in and they fill those six slots with different characters, fan art characters. And it's been so super cool to see what everybody, who people pick to draw, what they pick to draw, and then how they do it in that style. It's a good exercise too for you to see how you would do a broad range of characters that are already in different styles in your style as well.
Oh, that is tricky.
Yeah. So, and the reason I would say do the challenges or the contests, like every month SVS Learn has a contest where we give out a prompt, and then you have basically a month to make a finished illustration based off this prompt. And then it goes into what's called Critique Arena. And we pick the top 16 of all the submissions that month, and we put them in a bracket. And the people, our SVS subscribers who come to this, actually get to vote in each bracket.
Yeah, it's real time live voting. It is such a different way to view artwork, where we pit two people against each other, and only one person leaves, and it's great. And then they go to the next bracket. So we start with 16, it goes down to 8, goes down to 4, goes down to, and then we pick two winners.
And then those two winners are hired to do the illustration for our podcast episodes. So it's really cool to check out, and it's something available to our subscribers. So you want to do that? Subscribe to svslearn.com.
Those contests look like so much fun. I mean, maybe it's because we're dictating what the contests are, but Jake and I are doing one tomorrow at the Critique Arena. Mm-hmm. And so we were picking the top 16 yesterday. We're just like, man, this looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason I say to do that is it's a good way to sharpen your skills, hone your skills, and also to get a little more notoriety for what you do when you do that kind of stuff. Okay, so that was item number 6. Number 7 would be give yourself your dream assignment. You've got no assignments coming in from anybody. Hire out yourself to do the thing that you've always wanted to do. And so that could be like, I would say make it be something in alignment with what you actually want to do and want to get more work for. So you want to do children's books.
So Jake, yours would be a board game, which we decided last week, right?
Right. I would do a board game. You could do a children's book. You could do a comic. You could design a toy. You may not need have the resources to go all the way through and make the toy, but you could design a toy or a set of toys. But I think that's another way to just put yourself out there. I rarely see this, but I think it's something that it's a missed opportunity. But when I see people do it, I think that's genius and more people should do that. And that would be take something like Harry Potter, your favorite book series. Maybe it's something that has a very strong fan base, but the thing is sort of died down. You know, it's like 10 years away from being at its peak. Something like Twilight or something like that, you know? And redesign all the covers for it and just say, if I was to get this job to do all the covers for this book series, here's how I would do it. And I guarantee that would be blogged about. You know, if you do a really good job, that would be blogged about. That would be shared.
Sometimes that happens though too. Did you see the new Harry Potter set that Kazoo ended up doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What a crazy gig to get the entire book series again. Uh-huh. You know, you think it's done, and you know, Mary Grand Prix did such a great job the first time around, and all of a sudden our friend Kazoo gets a call to do all those covers right. brand new. Again, re-release of Harry Potter. And unbelievable.
Harry Potter's gonna be re-released for its, you know, next anniversary. I think that was the 20th anniversary of the first book or something like that. And so the 30th anniversary, they're probably gonna re-release it, and you guarantee that the diehard fan is gonna get it. And then the people who read it as a kid are gonna have a kid, and they're gonna wanna get it for that kid.
Right.
Those books will be in print for centuries.
It's true. The Lord of the Rings model, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. The next one would be launch a Kickstarter. That could be anything. It could be something small, like putting together a zine or something like that that you could sell for $5. It could be something as big as like, you know, that board game that you always wanted to make or something like that. I don't know, you know, there's something refreshing and challenging about doing a Kickstarter, about making something from start to finish and presenting it, and you're wearing all the different hats that a company would wear, you know, 50 different people in a company would wear to produce a product. You get to wear all those hats and you get to kind of go through all it and you learned something from doing the Kickstarter. It doesn't matter if it funds or not. If it funds, that's great. That's, you know, some bonus cash, right? But if it doesn't, you learn something from it failing as well.
I'd like to see the stats on what the how many people have started Kickstarters. Like, did Kickstarter go up once all the stay-at-home orders and all that stuff kicked in, and have people been home doing that already? Or I wonder if it...
I just
like to see the numbers.
Yeah, I wonder if you'll see that later in the year as people had all this time to like develop something. Because I think people were afraid to launch during it. But once things get back to normal, I think what everybody's been working on while they're while they don't have a commute and they don't have, you know, a 40-hour work week anymore, what they're gonna throw out there and put out there. That'll be interesting.
There's some cool stuff I just clicked on there. There's some fantastic stuff. One of the things I've always wanted to do, maybe I'll do it actually now, taking our own advice from this, I'd love to do a tarot deck.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool.
And there's some awesome ones on here. Oh my goodness. I'm checking out Kickstarter right now. There's a bunch of stuff I haven't seen in a little while. It looks like they're funding pretty well too. I know this is on the front page, so that tends to get those, you know, high traffic kind of deals. But wow.
Okay.
Pretty neat.
In that same vein, start a Patreon as well.
That's my deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it.
Yeah. So if you're already, I've been leaning into Patreon this last year, 2019, I did it. You know, I fired it back up again, and then I pivoted its focus in 2020, and I've more than doubled the amount of subscribers or patrons. You know, it makes way more money now because I shifted it from project-based to just, you know, focused on one particular project. I changed it to just, here's all the scraps of what I'm doing. Here's all the behind the scenes.
That's cool.
And so, you know, if I do a piece for whatever, you know, whatever project, I'm going to share the PSD with them, and they get a download of the PSD, and they can click through the layers and see how I did everything. I'm sharing, like,
I see it all. I'm one of your patrons.
That's right.
So I get to see all that, all those updates. I'm like, oh, Jake's, it lights the fire under me. I get a little email notification that, oh, Jake's made another series of things available. And I'm like, oh man, I got to get this thing going. I need my money back. See, because then Jake's sort of obligated to be my patron. And then so it's just a wash. But right now I'm just giving Jake money.
That's right. Okay. I have one last one. This is number 10. And it is, take some time to fill your creative bank account. Read stuff, watch stuff, play stuff. Experience the things that you want to be a part of, and just take that time to recharge, I would say. Because it could be that one of the reasons you're in between jobs right now is maybe your ideas are getting a little crusty. Maybe things are getting a little tired. Maybe you feel that yourself, that you're not as inspired anymore. And so fill your creative bank account, load it up with different kinds of things, different kinds of genres. Reach outside of your comfort zone a little bit, but also lean into your comfort zone and just fill it with stuff that you can pull inspiration from.
Those are good.
Yeah.
I have another one.
What's that?
I would say you maybe take the time to really reach outside yourself and try something that, you know, you had said like do your dream project, but maybe that's in line with what you're already doing. I love the idea of asking artists to do something that they haven't done before. Like, for example, if I were to take a silkscreen class or something like that, it's so far outside of the marks I make and the process that I have that you can't help but get something new out of it. But just because the whole process is different on how you lay down ink and how you make the image and all of it's different, you know, a sculpting class or something like that, just something way outside yourself, be surprised at how invigorating that can be and how it comes back into your regular process. Even if you don't keep that exact thing, it's, giving yourself the freedom to try something that you're not going to be a pro at. There's something so liberating. I mean, me and Jake and Will often talk about taking a landscape painting class when we're all together or something like that. You know, we're not going to become landscape painters, mm-hmm. but, you know, just something that's just totally different kind of mark. And I always think back to when I was teaching beginning concept design, and I had the students just get rid of their pens and get rid of the pencils. And we started just drawing with like a 30 to 50% gray marker. And we would draw with the fat side of the marker. Mm-hmm. And the marks were so different and so freeing because the value was low. And the marks were so organic that it changed the way that the art actually looked. And so I just, you know, it was just kind of an aha moment, like, oh, you change the medium, you change the materials, all of a sudden the output is different. The thinking is different.
That's super cool. That's a good, I'm adding that one to my list. That's awesome. Cool. Well,
freedom.
I wish Will could have got back in here because I wanted to hear his feedback, but we'll have to.
He'll have to join us on the forums, which all you guys should join us as well. Go there and chime in. I guess you can take us out because you talk about that. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll finish this. All right. LeeWhiteIllustration.com, LeeWhiteIllo on Instagram. And I'm Jake Parker, MrJakeParker.com, and Jake Parker on YouTube. Or JakeParker44 on YouTube, but at Jake Parker on Instagram. Did I say, and the other guys have YouTubes too. Boy, you'd think I'd never done a outro before for a podcast.
Well, but it's broken up because Will's back in the studio and it's a mess.
All right. Podcast produced by Aaron Painter. Find him at painterdraws.com. He's a all around good guy and we love working with him. Podcast edited by Alex Sugg, and that's Sugg with two G's. And you go to alexsugg.com and get your podcast edited by him. The podcast video over on YouTube is edited by Daniel Tu. That's T-U is how you spell Tu. And you can find more of his work on daniel2.co. And podcast and all of our social media is handled by Lisa Fott. So special thanks to her. And I think that's it, everybody. If you like this episode, go check out the forum at svslearn.com where it's free to join. There's a post devoted specifically to this episode where people can chime in and share their thoughts, and we'd love to hear what you think. And we appreciate it. We'll see you guys next time.